Hello. So I'm making this audio for anyone who maybe wants to listen to me read. I've been told that my voice is very calming, comforting, safe. If you had a nightmare, or if you're having a bit of anxiety, or you just want to relax, I am here to be of service in a way. I want to give something relaxing. And I want to read to you. I like reading. I like talking. And there's this specific book that I've been wanting to get through. And I think I'm actually going to make this a series, maybe. Of me just reading for about half an hour to maybe an hour, depending. This book is long. I will talk about it in a second. But yeah, for anyone who needs just to listen to something or wants to start their day with hearing me read, or go to sleep hearing me read, or just needs to calm down, I'm here. So. Alright. I have the book. So it's called Carry On by Rainbow Rowell. It's the number one New York bestseller. A triumph, sorry. Oh, by the way, I can read pretty steadily, but sometimes I do mess up. I apologize if that throws off the groove. Sometimes when I get nervous and, like, I'm reading out loud, I stumble a bit. So I'm gonna try to read slowly and not stumble, but if I do... Also, I've read the first, like, 20 pages of this because I tried making this before. There are some words that I might skip over because I just don't know how to say it. So if you hear a pause, I apologize. But I'll try to go as well as I can. So I'm gonna go ahead and read the back of it. I've read it before. So Simon Snow is the worst chosen one who's ever been chosen. That's what his roommate Baz says. And Baz might be evil and a vampire and a complete git, but he's probably right. Half the time, Simon can't even make his wand work, and the other half, he sets something on fire. His mentor's avoiding him, his girlfriend broke up with him, and there's a magic-eating monster running around wearing Simon's face. Baz would be having a field day with this if he were here. It's their last year at Watford School of Magics, and Simon's infuriating nemesis didn't even bother to show up. So... this was a book. Okay, if you know anything about Rainbow Rowell, she made another book called Fangirl that actually got a lot of hate randomly that I didn't know. I think it was fetishizing this book. But basically, this is a fan fiction from a made-up series in her story that was called Simon Snow. And the best way I can explain this book is it sounds like Harry Potter, but with vampires. So, I am gonna go ahead and read this. As I said, I apologize if I mess up on some words, if it just doesn't sound right. I'm gonna try to go as smooth as possible. So, anyway. This first page says, "You were the sun and I was crashing into you." This is a love story, by the way. But it's like a enemies to lovers trope. It's very interesting. But it's also very magical. Oh, it's just really nicely done. Anyway. So. Chapter 1. I'm going to see what chapter I get into and how many minutes I am in. Because I don't want to make this longer than an hour at least. Okay. So. I walk to the bus station by myself. There's always a fuss over my paperwork when I leave. All summer long. We're not even allowed to walk to Tesco without a chaperone and permission from the Queen. Then, in the autumn, I just sign myself out of the children's home and go. He goes to a special school, one of the office lady explains to the other when I leave. They're sitting in the Plegasus box, and I slide my papers back to her through a slot in the wall. It's a school for dire offenders, she whispers. The other woman doesn't even look up. It's like this every September. even though I'm never in the same care home twice. The mage fetches me for school himself the first time when I was 11, but the next year he told me I could make it to Watford on my own. You've slain a dragon, Simon. Surely you can manage a long walk and a few buses. I hadn't meant to slay that dragon. It would have hurt me. I don't think. I still dream about it sometimes. The way the fire consumed it from the inside out, like a cigarette burn eating a piece of paper. I get to the bus station, then eat a mint arrow while I walk. A mint arrow. Ooh, a mint arrow. I don't know what that is. While I wait for my first bus. There's always another bus after that. Then a train. Once I'm settled on the train, I try to sleep with my bag in my lap and feet propped up on the seat across from me. But a man a few rows back won't stop watching me. I feel his eyes crawl up my neck. Could be a pervert. Or police. Or it could be a bounty hunter. Who knows about one of the prices on my head. It's bounty hunter, I said to Penelope the first time we fought one. No, bounty hunter, she replied. Short for bone teeth. That's what they get to keep if they catch you. I change carriages and don't bother trying to sleep again. The closer I get to Watford, the more restless I feel. Every year, I think about jumping from the train and spelling myself the rest of the way to school, but even if it puts me in a coma, I could cast a hurry up on the train, but that's a chancy spell at the best of times, and my first few spells of the school year are always especially dicey. I'm supposed to practice during the summer, small, predictable spells when no one's looking, like turning on nightlights or changing apples to oranges. Spell your buttons and laces closed, Miss Possibliff suggests. That sort of thing. I only ever wear one button, I told her, then blushed when she looked down at my pants. Then use your magic for household chores, she said. Wash the dishes, polish the silver. I didn't bother telling Miss Possibliff that my summer meals are served on disposable plates and that I eat with plastic cutlery, forks and spoons, never knives. I also didn't bother to practice my magic this summer. It's boring and pointless, and it's not like it helps. Practicing doesn't make me a better magician. It just sets me off. Nobody knows why magic is the way it is, why it goes off like a bomb instead of flowing through me like a fucking stream, or however it works for everybody else. I don't know, Penelope said when I asked her how magic feels for her. I suppose it feels like a well inside me, so deep that I can't even imagine the bottom. But instead of setting down buckets, I just think about drawing it up, and then it's there for me. As much as I need it, as long as I stay focused. Penelope always stays focused. Plus, she's powerful. Agatha isn't. Not as, anyway. And Agatha doesn't like to talk about her magic. But once, at Christmas, I kept Agatha up until she was tired and stupid, and she told me that casting a spell felt like flexing a muscle and keeping it flexed. Like, crochet devant? She said, you know? I shook my head. She was lying on wolfskin rug in the front of the fire, all curled up like a pretty kitten. It's ballet, she said. It's like I just hold positions as long as I can. Baz told me that for him, it's like lighting a match or pulling a trigger. He hadn't meant to tell me that. It was when we were fighting the Chimera. Chimera? I'm gonna say Chimera. Chimera in the woods during our fifth year. It had us concerned, and Baz wasn't powerful enough to fight it alone. The mage isn't powerful enough to fight a Chimera alone. Do it, Snow! Baz shouted at me. Do it! Fucking unleash! Now! I can't. I tried to tell him. It doesn't work like that. It bloody well does. I can't just turn it on, I said. Try. I can't. Damn it. I was waving my sword around. I was pretty good with the sword, already at 15. But the Chimera wasn't corporal, which is my rough luck. Pretty much always. As soon as you start carrying a sword, all your enemies turn out mist and gossamer. Close your eyes and light a match, Baz told me. We were both trying to hide behind a rock. Baz was casting spells one after another. He was practically singing them. What? That's what my mother used to say, he said. Lighting a match inside your heart, then blow on the tinder. It's always fire with Baz. I can't believe he hasn't incinerated me yet, or burned me at the stake. He used to like to threaten me with a Viking's funeral, back when we were third years. Do you know what that is, Snow? A flaming pyre set adrift on the sea. We could do yours in Blackpool, so all your shabby, normal friends can come. Sod off, I'd say, and try to ignore him. I'd never even had any normal friends, shabby or otherwise. Everyone in the normal world steers clear of me if they can. Penelope says they sense my power and instinctively shy away, like dogs who won't make eye contact with their masters. Not that I'm anyone's master, that's not what I mean. Anyways, it works the opposite with magicians. They love the smell of magic. I have to try hard to make them hate me. Unless they're Baz. He's immune. Maybe he's built up a tolerance to my magic, having shared a room with me every term for 7 years. That night that we were fighting Chimera, Baz kept yelling at me until I went off. We both woke up a few hours later in a blackened pit. The boulder we'd been hiding behind was dust, and the Chimera was vapor. Or maybe it was just gone. Baz was sure I singed off his eyebrows, but he looked fine to me. Not a hair out of place. Typical. Well, Whitey, that was chapter 1. We're at 10 minutes, so I'm going to continue. 2. Simon, I assume this is the point of view. I don't let myself think about Watford over the summers. After my first year there when I was 12, I spent the whole summer thinking about it. Thinking about everyone I'd met at school, Penelope, Agatha, the mage. About the towers and the grounds, the teas, the puddings, the magic. The fact that I was magic. I made myself sick thinking about the Watford School of Magics. Daydreaming about it until it started to feel like nothing more than a daydream, just another fantasy to make the time pass. Like when I used to dream and become a footballer someday, or that my parents, my real parents, were going to come back for me. My dad would be a footballer, and my mom would be some posh model type. And they'd explain how they'd had to give me up because they were too young for a baby, and because his career was on the line. But we always missed you, Simon, they'd say. We've been looking for you. And they'd take me away to live in their mansion. Footballer mansion. Magic's boarding school. They both seem like crap in the daylight, especially when you wake up in a room with 7 other discards. That first summer, I'd beaten the memory of Watford to a bloody pulp by the time my bus fare and papers showed in the autumn, along with a note from the mage himself. Real. It was all real. So, the next summer, after my second year at Watford, I didn't let myself think about the mage at all. For months, I just shut myself off from it. I didn't miss it. I didn't wish for it. I decided to let the world of mages come back to me like a big surprise present come September, if I was going to. And it did come back. It always has so far. The mage used to say that someday he'd let me spend summers at Watford. Or maybe even spend with him, wherever he goes all summer. But then he decided I was better off spending part of every year with the normals, to stay close to the language and keep my wits about me. Let hardship sharpen your blade, Simon. I thought he'd meant my actual blade, the sword of mages. Eventually I figured out that he meant me. I'm the blade. The mage's sword, and I'm not sure if these summers in children's homes make me any sharper. But they do make me hungrier. They make me crave Watford, like, I don't know, like it's life itself. Baz and his side, all the old, rich families, they don't believe that anyone can understand magic the way that they do. They think they're the only ones who can be trusted with it. But no one loves magic like I do. None of the other magicians, none of my classmates, none of their parents know what it's like to live without magic. Only I do. And I'll do anything to make sure it's always here for me to come home to. I try not to think about Watford when I'm away, but it was almost impossible this summer. After everything that had happened last year, I couldn't believe that the mages would even pay attention to someone like me. To something like the end of term. Who interrupts a war to send kids home for summer holidays? Besides, I'm not a kid anymore. Legally. I could have left care at 16. I could have gotten my own flat somewhere, maybe in London. I could afford it, but I have an entire bag of leprechaun's gold, a big duffel-sized bag, and it only appears if you try to give it to other magicians. But the mage sent me off to a new children's home, just like he always does, still moving me around like a pea under shells after all these years, like I'd be safe there, like the humdrum couldn't just summon me, or whatever it was he did to me and Penelope at the end of last term. "He can summon you?" Penny demanded as soon as we got away from him. "Across a body of water? That isn't possible, Simon. There's no precedent. Precedent for that. Next time he summons me like a half-arsed squirrel demon," I said, "I'd tell him so." Penelope had been unlucky enough to be holding my arm when I was snatched, so she'd been snatched right along with me. Her quick thinking is the only reason either of us escaped. "Simon," she said that day when we were finally on a train back to Watford, "this is serious." "Siegfried and fucking Roy, Penny. I know that it's serious. He's got my number. I don't even have my number, but the humdrum's got it." "How can we still know so little about him?" she fumed. "He's so..." "Insidious," I said. "The insidious humdrum and all that." "Stop teasing, Simon. This is serious." "I know, Penny." When we got back to Watford, the mage heard us out and made sure that we weren't hurt, but then he sent us on our way, just sent us home. It didn't make any sense, so of course I spent the whole summer thinking about Watford and everything that had happened, and everything that could happen, and everything that's at stake. I stewed on it, but I still didn't let myself dwell on any of the good things, you know? It's the good things that drive you. I'm mad with missing them. I kept a list of all the things I missed most, and I'm not allowed to touch it in my head until I'm an hour away from Watford. Then I run through the list one by one. It's sort of like easing yourself into cold water, but the opposite of that. I suppose easing yourself into something really good so the shock of it doesn't overwhelm you. I started making my list, my good list, when I was 12, and I should probably cross a few things off, but it's harder than you think. Anyway, I'm about an hour from the school now, so I mentally take out my list and press my forehead against the train window. Things I miss about Watford. Number 1, sour cherry scones. I'd never had sour cherry scones before Watford, just raisin ones. And more often plain, and always something that came from the shop, then got left in an oven too long. At Watford, there are fresh baked cherry scones for breakfast every day if you want them. And again in the afternoon with tea. We have tea in the dining hall after our lesson, before clubs and football and homework. I always have tea with Penelope and Agatha, and I am the only one of us who ever eats the scones. Dinner is in 2 hours, Simon. Agatha will tisk at me, even after all these years. Once Penelope tried to calculate how many scones I've eaten since we first started at Watford, but she got bored before she got the answer. I just can't pass the scones up if they're there. They're soft and light and a little bit salty. Sometimes I dream about them. Number 2. Penelope. This spot on the list used to be roast beef, but a few years back I decided to limit myself to one food item. Otherwise the list turns into the food song from Oliver, and I get so hungry my stomach cramps. I should maybe rank Agatha higher than Penelope. Agatha is my girlfriend, but Penelope made the list first. She befriended me my first week at school during our magic words lessons. I didn't know what to make of her when we met. A chubby little girl with light brown skin and bright red hair. She was wearing pointy spectacles, and the kind that you'd wear if you were going as a witch to a fancy dress party. There was a giant purple ring weighing down on her right hand. She was trying to help me with an assignment, and I think I was just staring at her. "I know you're Simon Snow," she said. "My mom told me you'd be here. She says you're really powerful, probably more powerful than me. I'm Penelope Bunce." "I didn't know someone like you could be named Penelope," I said, stupidly. "Everything I said that you were stupid." She wrinkled her nose. "What should someone like me be named?" "I don't know." I didn't know. Other girls I'd met who looked like her were named Savani or Aditi, I think. Aditi? And they definitely weren't Ginger. "Oh, Sanvi. Sanvi?" "Someone like me can be named anything," Penelope said. "Oh," I said. "Right, sorry." "And we can do whatever we want with our hair." She turned back to the assignment, flipped her red ponytail. "It's impolite to stare, you know, even at your friends." "Are we friends?" I asked her, more surprised than anything else. "I'm helping you with your lesson, aren't I?" She was. She just helped me shrink a football to the size of a marble. "I thought you were helping me because I'm thick," I said. "Everyone's thick," she replied. "I'm helping you because I like you." It turned out she accidentally turned her hair that color trying out a new spell, but she wore it red all of first year. The next year she tried blue. Penelope's mom is Indian and her dad is English. Actually, they're both English. The Indian side of her family has been in London for ages. She told me later that her parents had told her to steer clear of me at school. My mom said that nobody really knows where you came from, and that you might be dangerous.
"Why didn't you listen to her?" I asked.
"Because nobody knew where you came from, Simon, and you might be dangerous. You have the worst survival instincts. Also, I felt sorry for you," she said. "You were holding your wand backwards." I miss Penny every summer, even when I tell myself not to. The maid says no one can write me or call me over the holidays, but Penny still finds a way to send messages. Once, she possessed the old man down at the shop, the one who forgets to put his teeth in. She talked right through him. It was nice to hear from her and everything, but it was so disturbing that I asked her not to do it again, unless there was an emergency. Number 3, the football pitch. I don't get to play football as much as I used to. I'm not good enough to play on the school team. Plus, I'm always caught up in some scheme or drama or out on a mission for the mage. You can't reliably tend a goal when the bloody humdrum could summon you any time it strikes his fancy. But I do get to play, and it's a perfect pitch. Lovely grass, the only flat part on the ground, nice shady trees nearby that you can sit under and watch the matches. Baz plays for our school, of course. He's the tosser. He's the same on the field as he is everywhere else. Strong, graceful, fucking ruthless. Number 4. My school uniform. I put this on the list when I was 12. You have to understand that when I got my first uniform, it was the first time I'd ever had clothes that fit me properly. The first time I'd ever worn a blazer and tie.
I felt tall all of a sudden and posh. Until Baz walked into the room, much taller than me and posher than everyone else. There are 8 years at Watford. First and second year wear striped blazers, two shades of purple and two shades of green, with dark gray trousers, green jumper, and red ties. You have to wear a boater on the grounds and up until your sixth year, which is really just a test to see if your stay put is strong enough to keep that hat on. Penny always spelled mine on for me. If I did it myself, I'd end up sleeping in the damn thing. There's a brand new uniform waiting for me every autumn when I get back to our room. It'll be laid out on my bed, clean and pressed, and perfectly fitted no matter how I've changed or grown. The upper years, that's me now, wear green blazers with white piping, plus red jumpers if we feel like them. Capes are optional, too. I've never worn one. They make me feel like a tit. But Penny likes it. Says she feels like Stevie Nicks. I like the uniform. I like knowing what I'm going to wear every day. I don't know what I'll wear next year when I'm done with Watford. I thought I might join the Mages Men. They've got their own uniforms. Sort of Robin Hood meets M16, but the mage says that's not my path. That's how he talks to me. It's not your path, Simon. Your destiny lies elsewhere. He wanted me to stand apart from everyone else. Separate training, special lessons. I don't think he'd even let me go to school at Watford if he weren't the headmaster there, and if he didn't think it was the safest place for me. If I asked the mage what I should wear after Watford, he'd probably kit me out like some superhero. I'm not asking anybody what I should wear when I leave. I'm 18. I'll dress myself. Or Penny will help. Number 5. My room. I should say our room, but I don't miss the sharing with Baz part of it. You get your room and your roommate assigned at Watford at first year, then you never move. You never have to pack up your things or take down your posters. Sharing a room with someone who wants to kill me, who's wanted to kill me since we were 11, has been... Well, it's been rubbish, hasn't it? But maybe the Crucible felt bad about casting Baz and me together. Not literally, I don't think the Crucible sentiment. But because we've gotten the best room in Watford... We live in Mummer's house, on the edge of the school grounds. It's a 4.5-story building, stone, and our room is at the very top, in a sort of turret that looks over the moat. The turret's too small for me, for more than one room, but it's bigger than the other students' rooms, and it used to be staff accommodations, so we have our own en suite. Baz is actually a fairly decent person to share a bathroom with. He's in there all morning, but he cleans, and he doesn't like me to touch his stuff, so he keeps it all out of the way. Penelope says our bathroom smells like cider and bergamot? And that's gotta be Baz, because it definitely isn't me. I'll tell you what Penny manages to get into our room. Girls are banned from boys' house and vice versa, but I still don't know. I think it might be her ring. I saw her use it once to unseal a cave, so anything's possible. Number 6. The Mage. I put the mage on this list when I was 12, too, and there have been plenty of times when I thought I should take him off. Like in our 6th year when he practically ignored me. Every time I tried to talk to him, he told me that he was in the middle of something important. He still tells me that sometimes. I get it. He's the headmaster, and he's more than that. He's the head of the coven, so technically he's in charge of the whole world of mages, and it's not like he's my dad. He's not my anything. But he's the closest thing I've got to anything. The mage is the one who first came to me in the normal world and explained to me, or tried to explain to me, who I am. He still looks out for me sometimes when I don't really even realize it, and when he does have time for me to really talk to me, that's when I feel the most grounded. I fight better when he's around, I think better. It's like, when he's there, I almost buy into what he told me. That I'm the most powerful magician the world of mages has ever known. And all that power is a good thing. Or, at least it will be someday. That I'll get my shit together eventually and solve more problems than I cause. The mage is the only one who's allowed to contact me over the summer. Not my magic, necessarily. That's always with me, and honestly, sometimes I can't take much comfort. I can take much comfort in. What I miss when I'm away from Watford is just being around magic. Casual, ambient magic. People casting spells in the hallways and during lessons. Somebody setting a plate of sausages on the table like it's bouncing on wires. The world of mages isn't actually a world. Wait. I think I skipped a page, hold on. Nope. Never mind. The world of mages isn't actually a world. We don't have cities or even neighborhoods. Magicians have always lived around mundanity. It's safer that way, according to Penelope's mom. It keeps us from drifting too far from the rest of the world. The fairies did that, she says. Got tired of dealing with everybody else, wandered into the woods for a few centuries, and couldn't find their way back. The only place magicians live together, unless they're related, is at Watford. There are a few magical social clubs and parties, annual gatherings, that sort of thing, but Watford is the only place where we're together all the time, which is why everyone's been pairing off like crazy in the last couple years. If you don't meet your spouse at Watford, Penny says, you could end up alone or going on single tours of Magic Britain when you're 32. I don't know what Penny's even worried about. She had a boyfriend in America since our fourth year. He was an exchange student at Watford. Micah plays basketball and he has a face so symmetrical that you could summon a demon on it. They video chat when she's home, and when she's at school, he writes to her almost every day. Yes, she tells me, but he's American. They don't think about marriage the way we do. He might dump me for some pretty normal he meets at Yale. Mom says that's where our magic is going, bleeding out through ill-considerate American marriages. Penny quotes her mom as much as I quote Penny. They're both being paranoid. Micah's a solid bloke. He'll marry Penelope, and he'll want to take her home with him. That's why we should all be worried about. Anyway, magic. I miss magic when I'm away. When I'm by myself, magic is something personal. My burden, my secret. But at Watford, magic is just the air that we breathe. It's what makes us a part of something bigger, not the thing that sets me apart. Number 8. Ebb and the Goats. I started helping out Ebb, the goat herd, during my second year at Watford. And for a while, hanging out with the goats was pretty much my favorite thing, which Baz had a field day with. Ebb's is the nicest person at Watford, younger than the teachers and surprisingly powerful for somebody who decided to spend her life taking care of goats. What does being powerful have to do with anything? Ebb will say. People who are tall aren't forced to play thrash can ball. You mean basketball? Living at Watford means Ebb's a little bit out of touch. Same difference. I'm no soldier. Don't see why I should have to fight for a living just because I can throw a punch. The mage says we're all soldiers, every one of us with an ounce of magic. That's what's dangerous about the old ways, he says. Magicians just went about their merry way doing whatever they felt like doing, treating magic like a toy or an entitlement, not something they had to protect. Ebb doesn't use a dog with the goats, just her staff. I've seen her turn the whole herd with a wave of her hand. She just started teaching me how to pull the goats back one by one, how to make them all feel like they've gone too far. Oh, my computer's about to die. She even let me help with the birthing one spring. I don't have much time to spend with Ebb anymore, but I leave her and her goats in the list of things to miss, just so I can stop for a minute to think about them. Number 9, the Wavering Wood. I should take this one off the list. Fuck the Wavering Wood. Number 10. Agatha. Maybe I should take my little Agatha off my list, too. I'm getting close to Watford now. I'll be at the station in a few minutes. Someone will have to come down from the school to fetch me. I used to save Agatha for last. I'd go all summer without thinking about her, then wait until I was almost to Watford before I'd let her back into my head. That way I wouldn't spend the whole summer convincing myself that she was too good to be true. But now, I don't know. Maybe Agatha is too good to be true, at least for me. Last term, just before Penny and I got snatched by the humdrum, I saw Agatha and Baz in the Wavering Woods. I suppose I'd sense something, that there might be something between them, but I never believed I believed that she'd betray me like that. That she'd cross that line. There was no time to talk to Agatha after I saw her with Baz. I was too busy getting kidnapped, then escaping. And then I couldn't talk to her over the summer because I can't talk to anybody. And now, I don't know. I don't know what Agatha is to me. I'm not even sure whether I've missed her. Okay. Let me see how many Okay, this would be a great place to stop, but I'm kind of interested in what's next. Let me see how many pages this next chapter is. This is a lot of pages, guys. There's a lot of pages. Huh. One page, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. Oh, alrighty. That's a lot of pages. And I think that's a good place to stop for now. So I'm going to stop here. That was a good read. A good beginning read. Sorry if I wasn't too great with the writing. I mean, reading. There's some words that I didn't fully know. Stuff like that. Anyway, my throat's getting tired out as well. But I really like this book. I'm really excited. Yeah, thank you for listening.